He's probably better than a lot of those guys that you'll be seeing. Okay. Anyhow, so I don't want to give the same share I just gave because I'm bored. We're gonna also discuss something related to Hadlakas Neros because that's the topic we were on, but maybe a little different and also very relevant. The whole discussion that you have about lighting Neros Shabbos is always seems to be assuming that you're actually providing light, meaning that you're actually doing something by lighting Neros Shabbos, because they didn't have electric light. So of course you're doing something by lighting Neros Shabbos, meaning of course you're contributing light. Nowadays the whole thing is questionable, right? Meaning all the light that you have, take this room. So what, you're going to light a candle somewhere in this room? What's it going to do? What does a candle really add to this room? So is it really even a fulfillment of Hadlakas Neros Shabbos? So the Poskim discuss, now that we have Or Chashmal, is there even a basis for Hadlakas Neros Shabbos? So we do. We light Hadlakas Neros Shabbos. Rav Shechter points out that the proper thing to do is that when a woman lights Hadlakas Neros Shabbos, she should also turn on the lights in the room and have in mind that the bracha is going on both of them, because that's really part of the kibbutz, the light of the room, and that's easy enough to do. Where it gets difficult and tricky is second night of Yontif. Why does it get tricky on the second night of Yontif? You can't, and you're not allowed to turn them off or on Yantif, right? We pass, you're not allowed to turn on or off electric lights on Yantif. There were poskim that held that you can dim lights, or, well, we don't hold that way. We don't turn lights on or off. We don't touch the electric lights on Yantif. So what do you do if you hold that really the Iker Hadlakas Neros is the Or Chashmal, right? Is the electric lights. So what do you do about Hadlakas Neros in the second night of Yantif? So Rebbetzin Shechter doesn't light on the second night of Yantif. You go and tell your moms that, and they'll be like, I thought Camp Kaylee was like a religious camp. What's going on? Like, how did you learn such happy courses there? So what most other poskim say is that you are adding something. You're adding ambiance. You're adding, like, you ever see a painting of a Shabbos table? It's not just like a really spitzy chandelier. There are always candles, right? That's what a Shabbos table looks like. That there's candles in the room, so it adds a sense of ambiance. Meaning people still use candles. Like, why does anyone use candles anymore? Because it's not only, this is where Rav Asher Weiss argues, it's not only about the light. You go to a fancy restaurant sometimes, and it's kind of dark, but they have like these candles on the table, or at a wedding sometimes, they have candles all over the place. I remember one of my friend's weddings, there was really fancy flowers, and there were candles hanging from all the flowers all along like the aisle. There is a minute when you walk Chasam Kala down the aisle to hold a candle as you're walking them. Ner Hashem Nishmas Adam, and something with the gematria of Ner, 250 plus 250 is 500, and 500 means something, I don't remember what. But whatever, there is like a, if you look at, you don't see it so much like at modern Orthodox weddings, but like at more yeshivish, certainly Hasidish weddings, but they always have if it's the mother and father walking the kid down, so they'll each hold a ner, or like certainly by more Hasidish weddings, it's not the mother and father that walk down, right? It's the two fathers walk the chasen down and the two mothers. You ever see that? There's a woman in my shul whose daughter was, whose children, she grew up in North Woodmere. Kids all grew up in North Woodmere, so they were never really exposed to like this Hasidish Olam, and they were at a wedding, and it was a cousin who was a Hasidish cousin, and so the girl is like 16 years old or something, and the two fathers were walking down the chasen, and she turns to her mom and she goes, "His dads are gay." she had never seen the idea of two fathers walking down. She's like, "No, you idiot." that's their practice. So they have. But there is this practice of carrying Neros down the aisle, and that's based on the Gemara. Meaning the Gemara has that Neros are a thing that you do in the Beis Hamishnah, that in the place of celebration you have Neros. So I remember one of my friends wrote that Neros like lining the whole aisle, which was such an awful idea, because what happens right after the chuppah? Dancing. Chasam Kala. And not only dancing backwards, right? So you don't see where you're going. There's huge crowds. People were like, it's a miracle no one got lit on fire, but everyone had wax all over their suits. Like, everyone had, like, the candles tipped and wax spilled all over everything. Absolute disaster. But what was I saying? So Rav Asher Weiss says that there is some value in lighting Neros, because it adds ambiance, and that's why we light Neros on Yom Tov Sheni. Yeah?
We discussed last week the Kavod aspect, so could that play a also having Kavod Shabbos coming up there.
Yeah, but you could do that by turning on the light, the Kavod Shabbos and Kavod Yantav also. But I mean, the Kavod aspect is that which you do before, so you turn on the light in advance, and that's also a Kavod. Now, obviously, that won't work for the second day of Yantav, right? So, so I guess it plays a role in that. That is, you're at least doing something with Kavod Yantav. Probably Poskim say that as well. Others say you're adding some light. So that's why, like at these hotels or even here in camp, you know, a lot of times they'll set up like a table of like a million candles, where no one goes near that table because it's a fire hazard, right? So they like sort of keep that table away from everybody. No one goes near that table. There's a million candles. Everyone lights over there. It doesn't add ambiance. It doesn't add light. It doesn't do anything. And women are saying bracha on that, so that's probably a bracha levatala. Like, I don't know what the justification for that is. That's probably a bracha levatala. When we go, you know, to these places, if they'll allow my wife to light on the table that we're eating on, so then she'll light on the table that we're eating on. Like, we went to a hotel for Pesach a few times, and I remember one time when we were in Florida, they gave us a private room to do the Seder, because that was my... I wasn't coming unless I was getting a private room to the Seder. My parents and in-laws very much wanted to go, so without telling me, they paid for the private room to the Seder. Like I said, I told the hotel, only if I get a private room. Like, you know, like, who is it that demanded only, like, the yellow jelly beans or something in the, you know, like, I was like the rock star, right? Only if I get a private room. They're like, are you kidding? We're not giving you a private room for the Seder. Like, you're lucky we're bringing you in the first place. So my parents and in-laws paid for it. And we had a private room. So in your private room to do the Seder. So then, since I just don't go for the Seder, I'll go, you know, to the hotels after. But anyway, so in the private room, they let you light on the table. Or once we were in a major dining room, but they let us. They told my wife, you could light on the table. Until, like, someone flipped over, you know, opened up a box of matzahs, and the matzahs are... boxes or cardboard, and the whole thing was on fire because it hit the candle, and the candle just lit the whole box of matzahs on fire. And it was like Shabbos Yantiv, and like, we're not going to put out the fire. There are waiters there, they could put out the fire. So my wife is like, excuse me. And the waiter's like, I'm taking this person's order. They're not happy with the duck they just got. I need to take their order. But there's like a fire over here, so maybe you want to pay attention to that. But so that's, there is, Rav Shachter would never say, even if you collide on the table, that you're allowed to say a bracha on that. Rav Asher Weiss would say you can, but I don't think anybody would say you could say a bracha on, like, when they're off in the corner. So you light in your room, not candles, but the electric light. They now sell these little electric, one of the Machon Somed, I think, in Israel, makes these little electric bulbs that are incandescent bulbs, which have a din of Aish, and they're battery powered, so the whole oil supply is there, and they burn out after 2 hours. They drain the battery. They're wired to drain the battery in 2 hours. Why would they do that? So that it doesn't, like, keep your room lit the whole night. So, because if you're in a hotel room, it's often, you don't want the room to be lit up the whole night. You want to be able to sleep. So it's wired to drain the battery more quickly. So essentially their fancy technological way around all the issues is to have the most primitive type of little light bulbs with the most inefficient battery usage. And that's what they came up with. Yeah. I don't know if it's... I think it might be an Avera of a Bracha Levatala. So I don't know if it's a... You can. It's probably better to just turn on a light in your room that you're actually going to use and not say a Bracha. Because that's really... You know, that's really your mitzvah. And they're out by the time you get back. That's another good reason why when you light Friday night, you should also turn on the light and have in mind for the lights in the house. It's another good reason to do that, because sometimes you get home and the candles will be out already. But what I wanted to attack this issue of electric candles from is from a different angle. We started to speak about if a woman forgets to light Neros Shabbos, right? So if a woman forgets to light Neros Shabbos one week, so there is a halacha, the Rama quotes in Shulchan Aruch. Hard to call it a halacha. It's a practice, a minhag, that Klal Yisrael has apparently accepted, that she lights an extra candle every week going forward. So in the last council share, I just spoke about that practice, that what it's based on, where it comes from, wherever it comes from and whatever its sources are, Women decided they want to do this. That's the Pasha Peshat, what the source is. Women decided they want to do this. And Chazal said, you know what? That's a nice idea. So they went with it and made it into Shulchan Aruch. That if a woman forgets to light Neros Shabbos, she lights one extra candle for the rest of her life. Question is, what if she forgot to light Neros Shabbos? So now, it used to be, if a woman forgot to light Neros Shabbos, what did that mean? It meant they were sitting in the dark the whole Shabbos, right? It's like forgetting to turn on the lights in your house. No, because once it's Shkia, it's still light outside, but you can't light anymore. So she forgot because it's ready. It's unlikely, that's what the poskim say, it's unlikely that she'll forget Neros Yontif ever. Because on Yontif, you're allowed a light. So anyway, they're sitting at the table. Something's different, right? What are we forgetting? I just can't put my finger on it. You know? So like, obviously, they would realize when there's no light in the room that she has to light Neros Yontif. So that's why one of the poskim says that if she a woman forgets Neros Yontif, you don't have to add extra candles, because it's Milsa Lo Shchicha Lo Gozer Bei Rabbanim. Yeah, you would bet that's a Milsa Lo Shchicha, at least at the time that they made a Takana. But nowadays, it would be a very... sure, it's a Milsa Lo Shchicha, right? Why would she remember? They're sitting in plenty of light, and they have. So, does this knas still apply? Meaning, was the knas because she made her family suffer through darkness for Shabbos, and therefore, to make up for that, she has to light an extra candle for the rest of her life? She has to add more light to the home, or do you say that no, the knas is because she didn't do the mitzvah of lighting neros? If it's about darkness, she didn't make her family suffer. No one even noticed the lights were on in the room. Also, does the knas even make sense? Meaning, what's the knas that, or knas, kapara, whatever you want to call it, this idea of adding an extra candle, what's the point? Point is, presumably, that she robbed light from her family, you know, she gave them a Shabbos with no light, so now every Shabbos going forward, there's going to be more light. But there's not going to be any more light. There's a million watts of light. There's the power of 10,000 candles in the room. So what do you mean more light?
It might
just be a reminder that she should always live with. But it seems hard to imagine that something like that needs like a lifelong, you know, remind him, because she forgot to light candles once, and it's like a lifelong. Now, Chazal do take Neros Shabbos very seriously. Chazal say, Hazar b'ner, havino banim tamid chachamim, so it's a big school. And on the downside, Isha Mesa b'shas ledasa, because she was not Zayr b'adlakas haner. So, you know, it is like a pretty serious issue, but it's like really, meaning Chazal didn't make this, women made it, because women are much harder on themselves than Chazal ever would have been. There's no way Chazal would have instituted something like this. This is pretty severe. So there is a machlokas nowadays that we have electric lights in every house, whether we make a knas on a woman who forgets light Neros Shabbos. There's a Tshuva Sefer Avne Yashben, Chelek Aleph Simenun Hei. He quotes, B'Shem Gaon Echad Shlita. So what do you do with that when someone calls B'Shem Gaon Echad Shlita? So what you do is sometimes, in some of these Sfarim that used to come out when I was your age, there were a whole bunch of Sfarim that were coming out that kept on quoting Echad Migdolei Adar, Gaon Echad Shlita. And like, you didn't know who it was until you look at the introduction to the Sefer V'zos HaBracha. You know the Sefer V'zos HaBracha? If you ever want to learn like Hilchos Brachos in terms of Birch Sananin, what you say in Mizonos on, when you bench, when you say Elamich, you know, like, in a very clear way, the Sefer V'zos HaBracha was like the classic great Sefer on that topic, you know, contemporary. What bracha you make on like all the contemporary foods and all the, it's very, very good. He actually just, a couple of years ago, published a second volume with Hosefos and whatever. But when in Sefer V'zos HaBracha, he's constantly quoting Echad Migdolei Adar. And in the introduction, he said that every time he says Echad Migdolei Adar, it means Rav Eliyashiv. Rav Eliyashiv didn't want to be quoted by name. So all you got to do is read the introduction, and then you know that Echad Migdolei Adar is Rav Eliyashiv. So this was apparently a common thing in a lot of stuff. So in the Tshuva Zavni Yashper, he quotes, Gon Echad Shlita, that's Rav Eliyashiv, that if you had the electric lights on, even though she didn't light Neros, one Shabbos, there's no Knas, because there was light. And he says that if a Shabbos clock lit the light, or is lit from the morning, then anyway you're not going to be Kones, because they weren't sitting in the dark. As long as they weren't sitting in the dark, it's perfect. perfectly fine. Meaning, even if she didn't do the act of turning on the light, it was just that the light happened to have been on, or it's on a timer, so it goes on every Shabbos at that time. We're not going to make knas. The knas is only on account of sitting in the dark. But then he says, I don't know, maybe the knas is because you didn't do something for Shabbos. So maybe if she turned on the light, l'kavod Shabbos, or told her husband, set the lights for Shabbos, and you know that's his job, that he sets the lights for Shabbos. So she made a shliach, you know, her husband to set the lights for Shabbos. Maybe that's okay. But if they just happened to have been on, maybe that's not good enough. So in Chut Shani, anyone know who the Chut Shani was? Nissim Karelitz was one of the great poskim in Bnei Brak. I think he just passed away like a couple of years ago. Nissim Karelitz was an Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od. I think maybe Talmud of the Chazon Ish. I'm not sure. Someone told me, a friend of mine told me that he once went to Rav Nissim Karelitz to ask him what bracha to make on sushi. And he said that they brought pictures because they knew that he'd never seen sushi before. And they said that, like, they sat with him for a while and he just couldn't wrap his mind around it. I mean, no pun intended. But he just couldn't like figure out like what it's raw like the whole thing like like then but the Gemara says raw fish is dangerous like the whole he just didn't so they didn't get a straight answer from him. And then on the way out they saw the Rebbetzin in the kitchen. They figured might as well ask her. So they showed the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin said, "You should wash and say a motzi on bread, and then eat sushi. That's a Yirei Shemayim. That's what you should do. I mean, okay, it defeats the whole purpose of having sushi, right? It's just to avoid having to wash. But anyway, the separate issue. What bracha do you make on sushi? I personally make mazonos. I've heard others say not to. That others say that you make a bracha of whatever's in the middle. I think unless you get the Eliza beer rolls, you know the Eliza beer rolls. Anyone from the Five Towns in Gourmet Glatt, they sell. Eliza beer is a nutritionist, a very popular nutritionist in the Five Towns. So she came up with a way that sushi is less fattening. You know how you make it less fattening? You put less in it, right? So there's like very little rice. It's just like very tiny amount of rice on the outside. Right. So if you get a roll like that, so then probably you don't make a mazonos because it's not, you know, the rice is not the majority in such a case. Diet sushi rolls. It just means there's no rice. Like, the whole thing is.
If you get four, I mean like three rolls.
Yeah. Rav Nissim Karelitz writes that if she specifically turned on the lights on Shabbos, l'kavod Shabbos, even though she didn't say a bracha, then for sure you wouldn't say a knas. Now, Rav Avadya Yosef holds like Rav Eliashiv that there's no knas anymore. This is why every time I get the shayla, my wife forgot to lie at this, that there's always a reason to be maker. Meaning, either it was an ones, it was something that was beyond her control, she took a kid to the hospital right before Shabbos or something like that, you know, something crazy was going on, it's beyond her, and by an ones, Mishabur says you don't have to lie. I think the Aruch HaShulchan writes, nowadays people's lives are so crazy and they're so busy, it's never really Shia. My wife forgot once, we were at a cousin's bar mitzvah in Detroit, and they set up lighting in the shul where we were eating. So in that case, not only were there electric lights on in the room, obviously, but it also wasn't really her responsibility to light, meaning we were guests of somebody else, so it's their responsibility to light, and they did light. So she didn't really have a chiv maker at the end. It's just women like to feel like they're doing the mitzvah, so they light wherever they go. But you don't really need to do that, meaning if you're a guest at someone else's home and someone else is lighting, so normally they'll set up two candles for you know, if a family comes to another family, they'll set up two candles for that woman. But really, you don't need to do that. In fact, Rav Shachter holds that's a bracha levatala. When the Shachters come to our house, it's happened a few times, they came to our house for Shabbos, so the Rebbetzin will always light an electric light in the guest room, and that's her light for Nero Shabbos. She would never just light the two candles. First of all, she would never light the two candles next to what my wife's lighting. Yeah, no need for that. In Shevet Alevi, anyone know who wrote the Shevet Alevi? Oh, you have a question? Anyone know who wrote the Shevet Alevi? Shevet Alevi is Rav Vosner, great posek from Bnei Brak. In the Shevet HaLevi, he says that he says it's he was asked about this with the electric lights, and he says, you know, I have a hard time with these kinds of shaylas because the Rishonim don't talk about it. Meaning, like, there are certain shaylas you can just look at, you know, it's the same shayla that it was 1,000 years ago, and just go through the Rishonim and see how they dealt with the shayla. He says there's nothing, you know, none of this is in Rishonim. Meaning, what does he mean? None of this is in Rishonim. The idea of electrolysis isn't Rishonim, and the idea of a woman forgetting and having to light an extra candle isn't really Rishonim, because it's not from Chazal. It came later. It was a minhag from the Maril that somehow got accepted. You know, so what exactly are the parameters of this minhag? The whole thing is not, you know, the whole thing is a little bit hard to put your finger on exactly what it is. But, he says, I think it's called that she forgot to light because she didn't do the mitzvah that she was supposed to do. And even if there is light in the room, nevertheless, she has a chiyuv to light, and therefore I think it's called that she has to, that she forgot to light, and she would have to, she'd have to light again. In Tzitz Eliezer, he explains a little bit more, and he says, like we said before, that there should be a chush of kavod va'onek Shabbos. And the chush of Kavod V'Onek Shabbos means an ambiance of Kavod V'Onek Shabbos. Who is Tzitz Eliezer? Might as well get the names of all the poskim who lived in the last, 50 years. Who is Tzitz Eliezer? Anyone know? Is he? Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg. Rav Waldenberg. Rav Waldenberg was the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital. Who is the current Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital? Rav Asher Weiss is the current Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital. Rav Asher Weiss, who is currently giving a shiur about 20 minutes down the road here, but they didn't let me come. So I wanted to bring all the masmidim. They're like, okay, how many guys do you want to bring? I'm like, 20. They're like, no way. meaning someone paid to have him come, and they want whatever, private audience. But so Rav Asher Weiss is the, what? I'm sorry? Yeah, no, they're not interested in me. Rav Asher Weiss is the current Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital. So Tzitz Eliezer was originally the Rav of Shari Tzedek Hospital. How did he become the Rav of the hospital? He had like a little shul right next to the hospital, and all the doctors used to catch mincha there and chakras or whatever, and they would all ask him these questions. So he kept on having to look up all these medical questions until he became a really great expert in medical halacha. And then they're like, oh, he's an expert in medical halacha. He should become the rabbi of the hospital. And he became, what? Tzitz Eliezer, Waldenberg. So he's most famous probably for one of his biggest kulas, if you can call it that. He was the posek that was matir in very extreme cases, was matir abortions. If the baby has whatever issues, and they know that in advance, and it's going to be too difficult for the family. So he was matir abortions in that case. Famously against who? Who held that it was absolutely murder to the Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe, right? Those are the two. In fact, the Tzitz Eliezer's tshuvas on abortions directly address Rav Moshe's tshuvas. Rav Moshe never addressed really other tshuvas from his time. Like, he didn't even look at them. Like, it wasn't. Rav Moshe looked at the Shulchan Aruch, the Nedav Yehuda, the Chassam Sofer. He wasn't. But all the other contemporaries from always have to address him because he was Ramesh, right? So Tzitz Eliezer spoke in very strong terms against Ramesh. The beautiful story of Shechter tells about Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman once got a phone call from a Talmud of his who was a doctor, and the Talmud said that he has a patient who's Nebuch in a very terrible emotional state, and the child, she's pregnant, and it looks like the baby's going to have serious birth defects, and she's going to fall apart. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "What do you want me to do? I hold that it's murder. You're not allowed to murder." So the Talmud said, "Rabbi, just think about it a little bit before you answer. Just give it some thought." So he's like, "All right, I don't know what's going to change." Like. Then a couple of hours later, Shlomo Zalman calls back the Talmud and he says, "Wait a second, this woman, is her husband a Talmud of mine? Does she live in Shari Chesed? Like, does she have any connection to me?" So the doctor said, "No, she's one of my patients. So I figured I would ask you." So he said, "She doesn't have to ask me her shaylas. Why does she have to ask me? Take down this number." And he gives Rav Waldenberg's number. Tell her to call Rav Waldenberg. He's a big posek. So, which is fascinating that you're allowed to do that. Meaning, if you really hold it's murder, and you hold that somebody else's being matir murder, are you allowed to? Because Rosh Hashanah never said kablu dati. He never said that anyone had to accept his opinion. He just said what his opinion was. But he didn't think you were bound to accept his opinion. It was a very different kind of anav, you know, a different kind of person. I always wonder about it. Just agav. I guess close with this. I wanted to ask one of the gedolim that was here that gedolim. You know, you hear gedolim stories like about Rosh Hashanah, and everyone is like, oh, what a sweetie pie. You know, like, what a tzaddik. Like, hear stories about Rav Palm. Like, every story is like what an edel yid. You know, he's like, as Rav Lichtenstein Zichron of Rav said about Rav Shlomo Zalman, if he forgot all of his story, he would still be the shenest yid in all of Yerushalayim. He would be the sweetest Jew in all of Yerushalayim if he forgot all of his story. Meaning, like, he was just such a sweet. And then you hear, like, about Gedolim, that big Gedolim, but, like, we're a little more aggressive, or, you know, or like, you know, stronger personalities, and like a lot of the stories seem like, is that bad midos? You know, like, are you really allowed to be that way? You know, is that so? Like, what do you do with stories? Like, do you say, like, we just don't understand what it means to be on that level, and that there's a, or is it like how do you relate to stories like that? I mean, it depends on the story. Sometimes it's with Talmidim. Like they say, Rav Soloveitchik, for example, in Boston, he was a Zaydi. Everyone, you know, he was like so sweet, and he'd sit there learning Chumash with the 6-year-old first grade girl before her Chumash test, because he was like all those stories. In YU, they were terrified of him. He was like, he went after his Talmidim. He was like, he screamed at them. He was like, if you weren't prepared, he was like they were terrified of it. I once asked Rav Schachter, if you had one more hour with Rav Soloveitchik, what would you talk about? And the Rebbetzin said, I know what he would do. For 59 minutes, he would sit and sit there because he was so terrified of the Rav. He wouldn't say anything. And then the last minute, he'd say, oy vey, I wasted my 1 hour. it's interesting. So, I mean, when you're dealing with Talmud, you understand that sometimes Talmudim need to be pushed. But I don't know. It's an interesting question to think about. Like, how do you deal with the different... So, you know, a good steady diet of Shlomo Zalman, Rav Palm, and Ramesha stories, I guess, is good to keep us going for a while. Okay, have a great day, everybody. Enjoy the...